Hare Krishna. First of all, I'd like to thank Ramananda Prabhu for very kindly arranging this program, not only this program, but all the many programs that he is organizing. He's doing a valuable service for many, many people by facilitating these classes. And I thank him for that. At his request, Ramananda Prabhu's request, we are going to speak about the future of ISKCON. Future of ISKCON, and at my request, Ramananda sent some questions. So I'm going to speak on the questions that Ramananda Prabhu sent to me regarding the future of ISKCON. So here we go. I'll speak approximately 30 minutes, see if I can compress all this. Lord Chaitanya predicted his name would be spread to every town and village all over the world, all over the universe. Prabhupada's godbrothers did not see this as something that they could really do right away. Prabhupada did have great faith in his guru's orders, and he did spread Krishna consciousness all over around the world. Are we still on track? Is ISKCON still on track to fulfill what Prabhupada started? If not, what can we do to get back on track? I would say basically yes, we're on track. I am. Regarding whether ISKCON is on track, I just started the recording. I forgot to record the Ustream, but I just corrected that. I am looking at things as a historian, and just as geologists see time differently, than track runners who think in terms of tiny fractions of seconds. Geological time moves, of course. I mean, we think in terms of thousands and millions and hundreds of millions of years. And so similarly, if we think about history, history moves at a very different speed than, let's say, the news we see on the internet every day. So in historical terms, I would say, yes, ISKCON is very much on track. ISKCON is all over the world. It's growing all around the world, not always in glamorous or spectacular ways, but nevertheless in solid ways in terms of building sustainable, viable social structures, family structures, community structures. ISKCON is developing a more and more relevant language to translate Prabhupada's teachings into contemporary parlance so that people actually really get what we're saying and also feel that we are speaking to what is important to them now. We are retaining more and more of our youth. We have a growing influence in educational institutions. The great thing we have going for us, actually, is that Krishna consciousness is real. Krishna really is who we say he is. And Prabhupada is real. Prabhupada really is a pure devotee of Krishna, and Krishna really is God. So that gives us a great advantage because we're not bluffing. We're not just trying to sell a product that goes in and out of style. And also because Gaudiya Vaishnavism and Vaishnavism in general has such a long history of existing and guiding and inspiring an entire civilization. Vaishnavism has developed the, it has developed a way of living, a way of life, a way of practicing spiritual life, a way of dealing with the world, which is eminently practical because it's been tested over history. It's not only a great spiritual philosophy and a great process for serious practitioners to get in touch with God by deep meditation on the names of God and other forms of service, but just how to live in the world singly or in a family, how to live has been really well established over centuries. And Krishna really does appeal to everyone. Krishna really is all attractive. So anyway, getting on to the next point, Prabhupada said half his work was done. We still need to establish Daivi Varnashram, in other words, organized society. The main problem in establishing the Varna system, of course, the ashram system we have. The ashram system means that devotees who, let's say, are serious about spiritual life should either be celibate or get married. And those who are celibate are either students and assist in various projects, or they may take sannyas. But still, we do have an ashram system. And now, my generation, people getting older, we have a growing and I would say more and more flourishing vanaprastha system. Obviously, we have celibate students, we have householders who are doing all the duties of raising families and so on, and we have sannyasis. But now we also have vanaprasthas, couples that retire but stay together. And that is really a very important growing segment of our society. So the ashram system is there. As far as the varnas, establishing in society that Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, in other words, teachers and priests, and then governors or warriors, political leaders, merchants, traders, farmers, and so on, and then workers. To make this very quick, the biggest obstacle we have is that this very simple social structure in which people are divided into four divisions is based upon and assumes an agricultural economy. If you look at Europe, although in the West people like to say, well, India had a hereditary caste system, Europe very much had a hereditary caste system. What ended it was the Industrial Revolution. So in one sense, the difference is just in India, the Industrial Revolution came later than in the West. But in India now also, the Varnas, the traditional, especially hereditary Varnas, are really under siege. They're really struggling to some extent because of modernization. So in a modern industrial, post-industrial, global economy, to divide everyone into four simple divisions is really a challenge. And that's why when Prabhupada introduced the idea of reestablishing the Varnas, he also said we should get farms. Because really, this simple social division is predicated upon, it's based upon, it assumes a simple agrarian economy. So that sort of gets into another topic. What's the fate of the world? Like, what about prophecies? Everything's going to collapse or not going to collapse? I would say in general we should be very cautious about prophecies, because people who really traffic heavily in prophecies almost always end up with pie on their face. Because, I mean, even in the New Testament, Jesus himself makes prophecies, or at least prophecies are attributed to Jesus in the New Testament, which actually didn't happen. Like, for example, Jesus saying that before some of you pass away from this world, you will see the apocalypse, you will see the judgment day. It didn't actually happen. So in the same way, Prabhupada said certain things, like, for example, during Prabhupada's time, the world was basically divided in this Cold War between the Soviet bloc, and of course China was not so important then, and the West, the free West. And India, for reasons understandable, I guess, to them, was a very close ally of the Soviet Union. So based on this old proverb, which you find in Chanakya, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, America became very close with Pakistan. So you had, and Pakistan and India were, of course, as always, in great conflict. So Prabhupada said that a conflict between Pakistan and India could or would trigger a nuclear war between the Soviet Union and America. And he talked about this, and of course that didn't happen. And now the political situation in the world is very different. India and America are closer and closer. Russia is sort of like a semi-ally of America. So Pakistan is still bizarre. So What I mean to say by that is, of course, many devotees sold their houses on the West Coast because it was going to fall into the ocean, California, which was, by the way, very bad geology. But, you know, Nostradamus Acharya, people thought he said that. So what I would say is beware of prophecies, because they almost always don't come true, and the people who make them never apologize for their bad predictions. They just make a new one. They make a new prediction, and when that fails, they again don't apologize. They make a new prophecy. So there's some things we can understand not by trying to prophesize, but just by common sense and looking at history. Like, for example, that the present global situation is not sustainable. The present consumerist economy, which is based on ever-expanding consumption with limited earthly resources, obviously is not going to work. Obviously, you can't go on like that. There are growing tensions. There is the inevitability of nuclear proliferation, including proliferation into the hands of terrorists. So the danger of nuclear terrorism is a real danger. So the world is a mess. And you don't have to be a prophet to understand that something has to change. Now, will the world be capable of peacefully reinventing itself, transforming itself into something sustainable? Or does it have to learn the hard way by apocalyptic, catastrophic events? Only Krishna knows that, actually. And I would, in the meantime, like Prabhupada said, we just go on doing our best to try to spread Krishna consciousness without, I would say we should give up two bad habits, two bad addictions, which are addictions to conspiracy theories and prophecies. It's probably better to focus on chanting Hare Krishna. So, another question here. Can the Krishna consciousness movement serve as an example to the world as to how a society can run in peace and prosperity? Relatively speaking, we have a very peaceful society. I think the amount and the intensity of our fights and disputes are remarkably small, given that we have this huge international society. We don't get into that much politics for the main reason we have almost no political power, or virtually no political power in the world. Prabhupada, when he started the In God We Trust Party, said it was that our slogan should be the party for purified leaders. So clearly, we have to not only have a large society of people who know the real philosophy, or people who know the Yuga Dharma and chant Hare Krishna and come on Sunday. I mean, that's also great. That's also, you know, I wish everyone did that. But we really need purified leaders, as Prabhupada said. And in this age, purification takes place by chanting Krishna's holy names. And of course, many other methods, but chiefly by chanting his names. So if it ever happened that, let's say, we came to have a lot of political power or great economic resources, that certainly would be a test of our purity. And in a sense, that would exercise our Krishna consciousness. It would challenge us. We would be forced to come to higher levels, because the greater the challenge, the more one has to grow and become strong. So in a sense, at this time, when we are still not that important in the world, from the material point of view, spiritually, of course, this is the movement, but from the material point of view, it's not that important. So this is a very good time for us to get purified, to chant seriously, and prepare ourselves for greater responsibility. Prabhupada always indicated that the more we're ready, the more Krishna will give us, that Krishna, with his dear devotees, will not give them enough rope to hang themselves. And therefore, if we want greater responsibility in the world, greater opportunity to change the world, we have to be prepared for it by serious spiritual practices. Hey, we're only halfway through the 30 minutes. Amazing. Krishna must be compressing the time. The present political or economic systems of the world are fraught with problems if leaders of the KC movement, that's Krishna consciousness for the unbaptized, if leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement were asked to guide world governments, what would be the first steps necessary to incorporate solutions to world problems? Hare Krishna. What would our plan be for the next 5, 10, 15, and then 20 years? Well, the Soviet Union and Communist China gave spectacular examples of the silliness of 5, 10, 15, and 20-year plans because they never, ever actually worked. But if we can talk more, not in terms of like a very detailed practical plan, but just in general what we'd have to do, let's say if we ran the zoo of the material world, if people asked us, let's say some world leader asked us to guide them. I mean, it's difficult because we very much live in an age where the tail wags the dog, as they say. Prabhupada came from a generation, he came from a world where leaders were leaders. Now, democracy has become so widespread and egalitarian values that a leader, let's say a leader of some country, decided that we're going to close the slaughterhouses. That leader would be lucky if he or she stayed in power another 48 hours before being thrown out. So who's leading? Like I said, the tail wags the dog. So leaders nowadays really cannot go very far ahead of the people they govern in most countries. I mean, China is still a little different, but even there, they've really kind of They're pushing the limits of autocracy, even in China, if you know what's going on there. So unless you bring the people along, the leaders really don't have the power to do very controversial things. They actually cannot do that. And so there is a sense in which the people really do have power and really do dethrone leaders. We've just seen Muammar Gaddafi, who was in power for 42 years, actually. He joined the tyranny movement almost the same time I joined the Hare Krishna movement. So we both joined something about the same time, and fortunately I haven't been thrown out yet. So, as he was. So basically this is not a good time for dictators. So really it goes back to the people. We have to convince a certain critical number of people that we shouldn't mercilessly slaughter animals, that people should chant God's names. We do have secular democracies around the world now. So Prabhupada's vision that the government would teach people to chant Hare Krishna, it's a great vision. It's not going to happen unless and until something really changes on this planet, because the West and in general the world is coming from a long history of fanatical, oppressive, super obnoxious partnerships between religion and government. And if you say that the government should promote religion, almost everywhere in the world is going to promote Krishna consciousness. They're going to promote all kinds of things that we would not be comfortable with. So to tell all these countries in the world, even in India, that just promote Krishna consciousness, you would really have to have an amazing, very large scale spiritual transformation first on earth, where a huge number of people in a particular country, certainly a very strong majority, really accepted that Krishna and the soul, these things are simply objective reality. It's a spiritual science. It's not a sectarian religion. Until you do that, leaders are actually very limited. They will not survive if they try to do almost anything pious or spiritual, which is controversial. So then you could always raise the question, what are the non-controversial pious spiritual things they could do? And I don't know, it's not a really long list, especially since the main, quote-unquote, mainstream religions think that killing animals is actually a wonderful thing to do, and probably if Jesus was alive today, he'd probably go hunting. I mean, they obviously this is not the product of deep thinking, but there it is. So, for example, I just saw a headline that Obama now, as he really is focusing more and more on his reelection bid, is the headline said, ramping up the God talk. So here's Obama, nice guy, intelligent, met Radhanath Swami. As a kid, used to go to, hang out with Hare Krishna, Guru Kuli. So nice guy, but he also loves his burgers. He loves his burgers. Maybe he just loves his burgers because he wants to bond with the common people. Okay, forget the fact that I went to Harvard Law School and all this stuff, and I hang out with all these sort of Northeast elite people. I'm really just, an average guy, and I like hamburgers. Whatever his motive, they say ramping up the God talk. So just God talk, like let's increase the God talk. It has to be extremely non-sectarian. It cannot tilt toward any specific religion. If it does, people go nuts. So at the present, so really, I don't see, I don't see guiding leaders as possibly preceding the persuading of large numbers of people, society in general. It's just not the way the world works nowadays. Will the present Krishna consciousness movement of the name and form ISKCON be able to continue to grow as a major player in guiding the world? Yeah, why not? Or can we expect that ISKCON will have to branch off and morph? Well, ISKCON can internally branch off unlimitedly. We can have unlimited internal refinements, organization, and so on. I think a global Krishna consciousness movement is the real hope of the world. I think it's very powerful. In fact, to be honest, although I would not for the life of me want to endorse the medieval European Christian church, still it's the fact that with the and the splitting up of this Christian hegemony, at least in Western and Central Europe, that was really the end of that was really the beginning of the end of a quote-unquote religious society, because secularism really took advantage of that, and the result is now an extremely materialistic society. So I think a united international Krishna consciousness movement under Prabhupada is definitely the best way to go historically. I don't see any major obstacles historically to doing it. Why not? Right now we see many different offshoots of the Krishna consciousness movement. Yes, history shows that any movement, when it gets a certain size, will have offshoots. You could have a group of people that say the sky is blue, and undoubtedly someone will say, no, that's not right. We need a new sky color society because it's not really just blue. And that's just the nature of humanity. Some people are just like, as soon as you get to be a big movement, they're against you because they don't like big movements. They don't like large structures, and so they want something smaller, or they disagree with something because they have to disagree with something. And so they're all, but at the present time, the offshoots are actually, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but I think just being scientific and objective are tiny compared to ISKCON. I think we just have to go forward, and we have to have enough humility to be team players. It's like, Sankirtan is a team sport. That's what the Sangh and Sankirtan means, a team, together. So we should work together. And Prabhupada used to say, as a motto we should follow, England, with all thy faults, I love thee. Not that we should love England, although it's a pretty nice country, but we should love Prabhupada's society and Lord Chaitanya's society. Of course there'll be faults. Of course there'll be mistakes. But we should still love it and work to improve ISKCON. It's like, for example, I've chosen to live in America. And there's all kinds of things going wrong in this country, but I still choose to live here. And therefore, I want to improve this country. The Krishna consciousness movement was started on an emergency basis. Well, I mean, Prabhupada sometimes used that term. It was also started as the natural culmination of a long historical process, beginning with Lord Chaitanya. Now, are we slowing down? Well, it's like, let's say you start a new company and you go out and sell 10 Vedic candy bars in your first day, and let's say the next day you sell 20 Vedic candy bars, so that's a 100% increase, and maybe you go up to 1,000, so you got these huge numbers. Eventually, it's going to slow down. You're not just going to go on increasing by 100%, 1,000%. At a certain point, things just kind of tend to stabilize, and so ISKCON does not have, at this point, all the excitement and novelty of a new movement breaking into an American society that in which there's this little, and also all around the world, this little window where people love things Indian and yoga and spirituality and looking for utopian communities and self-realization. At the same time, it is very much possible for us to regain our Krishna consciousness mojo, you could say, for us to really regain that energy. I think we should try to do that. I think we need a new Hare Krishna explosion, which is I see it dialectically. You know, dialectic means thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So the thesis means just the way things are, the status quo. Let's say back then was the movement was growing exponentially. Then the antithesis came where we were immature, we made mistakes, the world changed around us, and so instead of growing very quickly, it sort of slowed down. So that's the opposite, the antithesis. It opposes what came before. The synthesis is that the old way and then the new reality kind of combine and something new comes out. So I think in the old days, we were all about preaching, but we didn't understand how to take care of families, how to take care of ourselves. As human beings, the antithesis was focusing on taking care of ourselves and preach later. And the synthesis is that we should preach, but maturely, as mature human beings, as mature adults, taking care of ourselves physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, taking care of ourselves, keeping healthy, taking care of our families, our friends, or just whoever we're responsible for. But at the same time, enthusiastically spreading this movement. You know, really, really being convinced that people need this without being fanatical about it. And without sort of irrationally putting down other things. So that's what I think is really the order of the day. We have to move forward to the third step of the dialectic. I'm sure Hegel would appreciate this. And even Marx, maybe we could, you know, just show him what happened in the Soviet Union and China. He'd probably become Hare Krishna too. He saw, you know, the monstrous results of his, what he thought was a great idea. Anyway, so, those are the questions I was given, and this is an on-time arrival. Actually, within seconds, we will hit the 30-minute mark, which is what Ramananda Prabhu said. There it is on my clock. We just hit 30 minutes. So at this point, perhaps we can invite you to ask questions, however you can get them to me, chats or I don't know, just however it gets here.
Maharaj, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. The only one who is unmuted right now is me and you.
Okay.
So let me try and explain this to all the devotees that are listening in. Right now we have about 50 viewers on Ustream and 25 in pre-conferencing and about a dozen on Skype. So I don't know, there's probably 50 to 75 devotees looking or listening in right now. So again, the dynamic here is that Ustream is about 2 to 3 second delay. So if you have both volumes up, it's going to echo. That's a problem. So you have to choose if you want to ask a question. You need to turn down your volume, at least for the time you're asking a question on Ustream. There's no echo. Or if you want to simply type in a question, you can also do that as well. You can type it into pre-conferencing foreign to Skype. People that are familiar, you know what I'm talking about that. And also Maharaj has the ability to see questions that are typed into his Ustream.
Chat. Actually, I can't figure out how to find the Ustream chats.
Okay. All right, well, then we'll be limited to either Skype or free conferencing. So at this time, I am going to unmute everybody on free conferencing. I'm just asking anybody who's either on pre-conferencing or directly on Skype, make sure you remain unmuted so that there is not too much background noise. So you can mute and unmute yourself by pressing *6 on pre-conferencing. I hope everybody understood those instructions. Okay, here we go.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj Dandavat. This is your old partner in crime, Narahari.
Hey, Narahari Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Jai Prabhuji's. Wonderful to be back in your association again.
Nice to hear from you.
I'll ask a question. So far as the dynamics of ISKCON's ability to move forward and become as dynamic a force as we were before, it seems there was this magic quality back in the 60s, which was somehow by Lord Chaitanya's arrangement when Prabhupada came to the Western world. And during that time, particularly the younger generation was really in a state of spiritual searching. It seems almost like we need something like that to have the potency to move forward like we did before. But then again, the thought runs through my mind when Prabhupada met for the very first time with Bhakti Siddhanta. Prabhupada was so impressed when Prabhupada lost his argument. He put forward the argument that first we have to become freed from the control of Britain before we could move forward. And of course, Bhakti Siddhanta smashed him and said that this movement is not dependent upon any mundane thing. But at the same time, at least in my state of thinking, it seems, at least exoterically, it seems like that things aren't lined up as nicely as they were before from a material standpoint for us to move forward. It seems like it's become really difficult for our movement to grow as fast as it did in the past. And
yeah,
what would you say to that?
Well, Prabhupada himself would make... Well, Prabhupada himself would make... would make calculations. For example, he left India and came to America because India was in a particular socio-political, cultural situation that Prabhupada thought they're not going to get it. So he went to America and then came back to India. So Prabhupada himself sometimes would make those calculations. I think, you know, as far as doing what we can do, because we can't necessarily, well, I would say we definitely can't control history. That's in Krishna's hands. But what we can do is we can make decisions about our own life. And if we think, what was the essence of the 60s and early 70s? I think the essence was a certain excitement about something new, something wonderful. People were into consciousness, you know, unfortunately, some of it drug-induced, LSD or whatever. But still, there was that excitement about discovering and literally uncovering, discovering and finding new things. So the more we in our own spiritual life are having new experiences, the more we, by chanting Krishna's names, by sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness, are discovering Krishna, discovering ourselves as eternal souls more and more, then that will get us excited and energized. We want to go out and tell people the good news because, in other words, something has to be happening in our own lives where every day by our dedicated spiritual practice, suddenly it's a new world. Like we're born into a new world. It's more beautiful. It's more colorful. It's more exciting. It's because suddenly we understand Krishna more and we see Krishna more. We see ourselves. So if we could somehow get excitement in our own spiritual lives, which is something we can do, We may not be able to control political events, but we can decide to be very sincere in our own practices. And that, I think, and the more devotees that get really excited about their own Krishna consciousness and want to share it with others, I think, you know, this could reach a tipping point where the movement gets really excited and exciting. Because if the movement's not excited, it's not going to be exciting. It's like, I'm not really that excited, but I would like you to be by buying this book. I mean, that's nice, it's pious, but it's... We have to be excited in our own spiritual life and then contagiously transmit that to others. So, any other question?
Great answer.
Hello?
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry for as there are technical challenges here because of the echo and a lot of people.
Oh,
okay.
Hello?
Okay, we can hear you. Go ahead
okay,
if you'd like to ask a question.
Maharaj, this is Dwani.
Hey, Dwani, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. But, I was thinking just from the title of the talk is the next 20 years, or for ViSCON, the next 20 years. And so I couldn't help but think about how so much of the future of ViSCON is dependent on our youth and what they do and how seriously they take Prabhupada's movement. And I was thinking about how there are sannyasis who have passed away already, like Bhakti Tirtha Swami or Tamal Krishna Goswami's great saints have already passed. And as time moves on, you know, a whole generation kind of moves up on the ladder. And I sometimes think that a lot of youth, you know, some people are Gurukulis, some people are just, you know, children of devotees, but people in their early 20s and 30s who have drifted away from the movement, but we all have something in common, which is that we were raised in Krishna consciousness, or we are familiar and we have that affinity towards Prabhupada. So what would you say that those people can do? To
the youth?
Yeah.
The youth? I would say, well, we know in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, the famous verse predicting Lord Chaitanya, Yagyaya Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Sumedasa, those who are very intelligent will worship the Lord. So I would say the youth have to be mature enough to understand that inevitably, in this world, an institution, a spiritual institution or whatever, will have certain difficulties. It's just the nature of this world, just like each one of us individually has problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who can say, no, I've got no problems at all? As soon as someone says that, you think, you've really got problems.
Right.
And so... every individual person has their problems, whether they're financial, emotional, spiritual, whatever. And so you get a whole bunch of people with problems together, you get a society with problems. But
mm-hmm.
So we can't, Prabhupada once said we should not be foolish utopians. We should not foolishly expect perfection in this world, but rather we should see that with all of its limits or imperfections, ISKCON is doing fabulous service around the world. It's helping so many people. And I think every one of us has to find our place. We can't be like the foolish, you know, Don Quixote, who was jousting, fighting with a windmill.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way, someone can have an idea in their mind that, well, ISKCON, the GBC, and blah, blah, blah. But actually, I mean, it's an amazingly free society. And within certain, I would say, reasonable boundaries, you can sort of do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a question of every youth taking themselves seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I just going to drift through life and then, you know, die some, you know, babbling in some old age home and drooling? Or am I really going to make a difference? Am I going to really star in my own summer blockbuster movie and help Prabhupada? Or am I just going to, am I going to surrender to Krishna or to mediocrity?
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone, it doesn't matter like you know what someone's propensities are or where they live or man, woman. I mean, all that's irrelevant in the sense that everyone has something to offer Prabhupada's mission. It's a question of making an individual decision that I want to help to save this planet. And by doing that, I'm really helping myself. Because Krishna says in the Gita that one who teaches others is most dear to me. So everyone's got something they can do for Krishna that's valuable. And again, nowadays with the internet, communities are often not geographical. There are geographical communities, but they're often not So what I mean to say is, ISKCON is so large, and there are so many millions of people in ISKCON, all types. I mean, we have everything. We have the full range of human types. Fortunately, we haven't had a serial killer yet, but I mean, let's say within certain limits, there's all kinds of people. So you just have to find your community. The S in ISKCON stands for society. And some people are frustrated because they expect or a society to be a community. And sociologically, they're very different. A society, let's say a community, means a group of people that know each other, that have regular contact with each other. That's a community. ISKCON is a society. So you have to, within ISKCON, you have to find your community, whether it's a geographic community, whether it's a, you know, extended family or a cyber community or whatever it is. But you have to find your community, and with the strength that comes from community and the resources that come from society, you have to really make your mark. You've got to take all you've got and offer to Krishna, knowing that Krishna is not a religious fanatic. That's the good news. It's like that bumper sticker that says, "Jesus, save me from your followers." So we have to, I mean, however someone may represent Krishna, the real Krishna is actually quite an open-minded, fun-loving guy. And if you surrender to him, he's going to find something practical and doable and pleasant for you. So I would say every youth really has to come to that internal decision and conviction that life is temporary, life is short, and what do I want to do with my life? Do I want to make a difference? Do I want to have a great life? And if so, just consult with others, people, and find the way to have a great life for Krishna.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. By the way, Dwani is very kindly editing a book from
Oh, Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Janas Priya. Would there be any advantage if when the devotees go out preaching, they should, like if we go to a college, so we have more like regional type prasadam to distribute and wear Western clothing?
Prabhupada, of course, was completely open. In fact, who was it? A god brother of mine just called me and said, you know, I just read this. He read me this something from Prabhupada. He said, "Well, that's what you've been saying about just wear whatever dress is practical." Of course, I wouldn't advise a man to wear a dress. But I think the real point is that if you go for that niche, this is my personal opinion, if you really want that niche, like this is the festival of India, this is the culture of India, that's nice. And people will respect you and appreciate you and make a little space for you within the society and then forget about you. Because that's what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada himself said, Westerners don't want to become Indians. And although there's nothing wrong with India, they're, you know, wonderful people, but it's just people – I mean, there is more and more of world culture. So the more we create material problems and material obstacles and material requirements in order to practice bhakti yoga, I think the less people will have. That's my personal view. I think people, and so if you go to a college, if your message is that to be a serious spiritual practitioner, you have to change your dress, if you think that's a rational message, I don't. I think that's completely false. Prabhupada said just add Krishna consciousness to your life. So I guess people have different, devotees have different temperaments. Some devotees feel wonderful in a dhoti. It's just like they love it. They love wearing their dhoti. And that's their right. Personally, I love making people comfortable. And I love making people see that, you know, a normal person can do this. That's what I love. So so personally, when I go to colleges, yes, I do wear, you know, you can say Western clothes. It's not even Western anymore. It's just the way the world dresses. That's kind of an anachronism. It's kind of, you know, out of date, because Western dress, go to any serious Indian university and everyone is wearing what we call Western dress. It's not Western dress anymore. It's world dress. That's the way everybody dresses. So it's not that we're promoting decadent Western culture. I think there's something to be... Then, of course, there's the argument about uniforms. And what I say is the general advantage of a uniform does not necessarily justify a specific uniform. It's like, what if, for example, policemen, instead of wearing these like sort of like really cool, like, you know, pants and shirts and everything, what if they wore miniskirts, or what if they wore clown costumes? You could say, well, it's a uniform. So if you know, what if police wore clown costumes? So if you saw someone dressed as a clown in the street, you know that's a policeman. So if I need a policeman, look for someone in a clown costume. It's not just the general idea of wearing a uniform. It's wearing something that really people feel comfortable with, they can relate to, and it totally connects with them. So I don't want to tell everyone how to dress, but I think the idea that somehow a dhoti is Vaishnava dress, of course, is something we invented. I mean, if you look at the scriptures, there's no, I mean, saris, some people say it came from Muslims, but, you know, all these things covering it. We call it Vaishnava dress, but that has very little to do with actual history. In India, if a woman wears a sari, it does not mean she's a Vaishnavi. Anyway, some of you have heard this, you know, too many times already, but so I think we should just be very practical and focus on the essence. A Vaishnava is saragrahi. Vaishnava takes the essence, and the essence is love for Krishna by the practice of bhakti yoga under Prabhupada's guidance. That's the essence. So, any other point?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Dora Karuna Darshan from Miami. Maharaj, regards to the question that Mataji did before, for the next generation of leaders or gurus in ISKCON, what would you tell them if they have to concentrate in any specific population or part of the world to preach? Where would you say that they should be taking care of? What part of the world do you think is more prone or appropriate to preach to about Krishna consciousness to become a bigger and important religious movement? Europe, South America, the United States, Africa. Do you have any views on that?
It's obviously Luxembourg. Just kidding, that was a joke. I was once with Prabhupada in Mayapur, and the late Swarup Damodar, Swarup Damodar Maharaj, came to see Prabhupada, and Swarup Damodar was having great success preaching in Manipur, where he was born. And he was telling Prabhupada that it's still, in Manipur, there's still so many Vaishnav customs and so on, and that we could make Manipur Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada then said, Yes, he said we need to make one area Krishna conscious. Now he said it doesn't matter where. It doesn't matter where. So Prabhupada offered this opportunity to everybody. I mean, he said Laguna Beach could be the first Krishna conscious place. Hawaii, it's like, you know, Prabhupada lots of places said you can be the first Krishna conscious place. Look, for example, to give a negative example, at the present time for those who depress themselves by keeping up with world events, there are serious economic problems, financial problems, banking problems in the Eurozone, you know, the part of Europe that uses the euro. And what is causing this huge problem is Greece, the country of, not my kitchen Greece, but the country of Greece. And Greece is a very small country. It's not, you know, the tiniest country, but it's a, certainly a small country compared to England, France, Germany, even Spain. And Greece, as a part of the European Union, is just a very tiny part. And yet, the financial troubles in Greece are just causing havoc in the whole European banking and financial system. And it's even causing trouble in America and other places in the world. Greece. So something can start somewhere. It's like Libya, for example. Libya is really not that big a country. It's a desert country. There's not that many people that live there. If you look at the population, I forget, it's 7, 8 million or something like that. I mean, it's a very small country in terms of population. But the whole world is focused on Libya. So I think that wherever someone is able to preach most effectively, try to make that place Krishna conscious. And a big success anywhere could really change the world. It could be a catalyst to have great impact in the world. So,
thank you, Maharaj.
De nada.
Actually, I'm Ananda Gopika from Argentina.
Oh, Argentina.
How are you? Your vision is very, very modern vision. I'm happy to hear you. It's very nice to hear you.
Gracias. Thank you.
De nada.
Here we're getting a free commercial there.
Yeah.
So, any other questions?
I'll ask a question if no one else has one. You said earlier you were talking about a prophecy that Prabhupada made that that a nuclear catastrophe would begin with the genesis of the conflict between India and Pakistan, but yet that prophecy never came to pass. So how do we handle that? I mean, of course, we as Vaishnavas, as followers of Prabhupada, we understand that what he would tell us spiritually would all come true, but materially not necessarily so. How do we answer this if people were to sort of pick at that and criticize and say, well, your leader said this would happen, but it never did happen? How do you handle that?
Well, I would go back to that old saying, if everything else fails, read the instructions. And Prabhupada really, let me preface it this way. If you look at the history of religions and the Jesus movement, the original Jesus movement is an amazing example of this. Buddhism is an amazing example of this, Shankara's movement. There's a very strong historical tendency that the early followers or even later followers of a great leader mythologize the leader. So that again, you see that in the case of Jesus, it's an amazing example of that in terms of what is very likely that the historical Jesus preached and who he was, and you know, they sort of upgraded him to God. And Buddha, who presented very simple, basically sort of like self-realization psychology without metaphysics. He didn't want to talk about metaphysics. And then the Mahayana Buddhism that grew out of that is just, it's amazing. Or Shankara, who actually, as scholars know, was really a closet Vaishnava. Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam. And yet Shankara's descendants and early followers were much more heavily impersonal, much more than Shankara was. So there's a tendency, and with Prabhupada was obviously a pure soul, free of false ego, free of vanity, pure soul, who very clearly explained exactly what his position was. And what Prabhupada always said, if you care to look at the quotes, is that he is infallible. Because and when he's repeating what Krishna said. One second, I'm just going to close the door. It keeps some noise out here. So, therefore, it's very interesting. If you look in the Veda base and look at Prabhupada's statements, there's two kinds of statements. There's one group of statements where Prabhupada will say things like, I never gave my opinion. When did I ever give my opinion? This is not my opinion. He'll really very emphatically say that. There's a whole other body of statements where Prabhupada says things like, well, my opinion is, this is my opinion. So what's going on? If you look at Prabhupada's teachings, which perfectly present the teachings of Shastra, Prabhupada made it clear that the guru speaks infallibly when the guru faithfully and accurately repeats Krishna's message. That was Lord Chaitanya's instruction. Jare dako tare kaho Krishna pradesh. Amar agyai guru hoi tare desh. The duty of a guru is to give Krishna upadesh, to give the instructions about Krishna or given by Krishna. So Prabhupada, as someone who was appearing in a human body, a spirit, obviously a completely spiritualized human body, but nonetheless appearing in this world, he would sometimes just kind of like give his opinions about things or repeat what someone told him. Yeah, when I was in college, I heard this or that, or I read in the newspaper. He would just do what everybody does. He would just talk sometimes. And so meanwhile, you have these devotees who are kind of like right out of a Monty Python Life of Brian movie. You have these devotees who, even when Prabhupada is just sort of casually talking about politics or this or that, everything is Shastra, everything is absolute truth, everything is, and Prabhupada wouldn't recognize himself in that picture. In fact, there's a conversation which is in the Veda base where Jayadvaita directly asked Prabhupada, Jayadvaita Swami, is the guru omniscient? In other words, does he know everything? Prabhupada sort of said, what? Or like, who told you that? Krishna is omniscient. So when I say that some people mythologize Prabhupada, I don't mean he's an ordinary human being. That's the other extreme. One extreme is to ignore what Prabhupada said about himself. When
Hello?
Yeah, just a moment. Let's see. It looks like Skype dropped Maharaj.
After a few years, he thought, okay, I'm safe now. He let his guard down, which he shouldn't have, because Henry VIII had a sort of an unlimited ability to do stupid, evil things. And so he sent over some secret agents, captured this guy, brought him back to England. He got a trial with a very predictable result, and he was executed. Why? Because he translated the Bible into English. So the idea here is that when, if Prabhupada is an enlightened soul, which he obviously is, maybe when he talks about himself, we should take that seriously too. So, yeah, so the picture we get, that I get when I see Prabhupada and study his life, pure devotee, came from Krishna, and he's bringing us back to Krishna. And when it comes to mundane things that are not in Shastra, he's just kind of talking. And it's not Shastra. That's the picture I get from Prabhupada. I would not presume to invent my own Prabhupada either by in other words, to ignore what Prabhupada and he taught him about himself. To ignore what Prabhupada says about himself because Prabhupada's greater than what he said about himself. Is still not following Prabhupada and not taking him seriously. So, it's not a problem. And I think actually the world will be happy to follow and love a Prabhupada who is merely a pure soul from the spiritual world who can bring us back to Krishna. That's pretty good. Anyway, that's the answer, in my view.
Maharaj?
I don't think he's very green. I see him on something saying that he's
a green. You can never use team drop. You have to redial.
I hope you understand. All right, can you come out?
I just have to dial back into this.
This service is provided by freeconferencing.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound. This menu will repeat. Access code accepted. There are 8 participants in this conference.
I received a question from a devotee. What does it mean that a pure devotee is Tri Kala Gya, which means three time knower? Tri Kala Gya knows past, present, and future. This means, according to Shastra, the way it's used in Shastra, that, among other things, a pure devotee knows the seasons. For example, we are four-season gya. We know that it's now just the very end of summer, and then fall, winter, and spring. And so you get statements like this in the Bhagavatam when the sages know, for example, Kali Yuga is coming, and the Kali Yuga will have. So Kala literally means to know different times in the sense of different seasons. It doesn't mean to know every detail about what's going to happen in the future. It's because, you know, that's kind of Hollywood where you actually go to the future or you can see the future. The future doesn't exist right now, and there's nothing to see. But we know that. It's just like winter doesn't exist right now, but we know it's coming. Exactly what will happen in the winter, you know, the exact temperature at every moment of every day or what political events will take place this winter, we don't know. But we know winter's coming in general. We know generally what's happening. So the Tri Kala Gya is not – we do not have stories in the Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata, where someone literally sort of in the Hollywood sense of the word – sees the future and can see exactly what everybody's doing. I mean, we don't, it's more knowing Krishna's general plan for the yugas and things like that. What's that?
There is one. I have two devotees waiting to ask questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Kandita, go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Kandita Devidasi from Hawaii. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Who is that?
I just. Kandita.
Oh, Kandita. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to respond to, you know, the idea of Srila Prabhupada making predictions. Can't it also be, it seems like, I've been reading the Leelamrita, that maybe certain things are meant to happen, but then Krishna, being the Supreme Personality and of Godhead and the Supreme Controller, he can change things as they go along. So maybe things might have were meant to happen, but then according to time, place, and circumstances, Krishna can just change his mind and change things.
Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, certainly that's possible. That's certainly possible. My point would be, and I obviously I have no power to deny that because that's between, you know, only Krishna knows that.
Right.
But my point is that Prabhupada, if you look at, if for those of us who had the wonderful fortune of being with Prabhupada and talking to him and so on, he really didn't present these things as like sacred prophecies. I declare, you know, in some solemn voice, like I declare that in the future there will be. It was just kind of talking. It's the way, let's say, if ordinary, like people are talking, they say, yeah, there's going to be a war. The way they're going now, there's going to be a war. And Prabhupada didn't, it's not like when he made a prophecy, he said that he would remember it or even never talk about it again or say, I mean, it was just kind of throwing something out. For example, I'll give you an example of a real prophecy that Prabhupada took seriously as a real prophecy. It was Lord Chaitanya's statement, Prativite Ache Jatanagra Adigram, Sarvatra Prachar Hoive Moranam. In every town and village, there will be preaching of my name. Prabhupada took that seriously. This is a real prophecy. And he would quote it, he would preach that all around the world, that Lord Chaitanya said this, therefore it's going to happen. Or, for example, Prabhupada took seriously the prophecies that in the Kali Yuga people would become degraded. He took that seriously. But as far as his own observations, like there's going to be a war here, for example, he said when they were doing the In God We Trust political party, in 15 years, Balavanta will be president. And, of course, that didn't happen. And Balavanta, went into some other services. But what I mean to say, I do not believe, based on my experience with Prabhupada, I do not believe he himself regarded these statements as serious prophecies. And I think the evidence is that after he made them, almost all the time, he would never mention it again in his whole life. He would just, it's not like this is a prophecy, I want to remind you about this. He just, I don't know if he ever, he would just forget about it and never talk about it again. So, I mean, if Prabhupada is making a serious prophecy and it doesn't happen, you could say, okay, we need some explanation. Maybe Krishna changed it. But I do not believe that Prabhupada ever saw himself as making serious prophecies. If you look at Prabhupada in India, in the West, Prabhupada was always associating with very young disciples who were, I mean, we were immature and very young and didn't understand that much. But in India, Prabhupada associated with his life members who were not maybe, you know, practicing sadhakas, but they were very, very mature human beings. These were very rich people. I mean, just very important, very intelligent, mature people who shared culturally a lot with Prabhupada. They really understood a lot of the culture that Prabhupada was trying to present. For example, once I stayed in Prabhupada's room, I stayed in a house in New Delhi in, I think, 1978, where Prabhupada always used to stay, 78 or 79. It was the house where Prabhupada would always stay when he went to New Delhi before they built a big temple. In fact, I stayed in that house once when Prabhupada was there. Prabhupada stayed there, and myself and a few other quote-unquote leaders stayed there. And it was a very nice man. I was a very rich man, you know, a very good neighborhood. And when I went there, just a year and a half after Prabhupada's disappearance, and, of course, this man was just, you know, so emotional. He was full of Prabhupada stories. And he told me that when Prabhupada would be there at night, would stay there sometimes in the warmer months because it gets so warm in Delhi, that this gentleman in his large backyard, he would set up these little cots, these little, and he would probably just sleep out under the stars. And he said he and Prabhupada would just sort of stay up all night just talking. And he just imagine Prabhupada just lying there under the stars, and here's some gentleman, a leading industrialist in India, and Prabhupada, they're just sort of talking. And if you look at those conversations where, for various reasons, Prabhupada was much more relaxed because, you know, culturally, it was just much more relaxed. There's all kinds of give and take. Like, Prabhupada will say something about a material thing, and one of these ladies or gentlemen will say, well, actually, Prabhupada, it's not that, it's this. And Prabhupada will say, okay, so then it's this. In other words, on material things, he was just really not, he just wasn't in that mood of Moses coming down from Mount Sinai or something. He just wasn't in that mood. It was just sort of friendly give and take, just sort of chatting, talking about things in this world. And I think a lot of times it was in that mood, he would just throw out things like, yeah, this is going to happen or that. And meanwhile, we regard these things as these very solemn, grave, sacred prophecies. And I don't think that's what Prabhupada was doing. But in any case, as far as the point you raised, sure, I can't deny that. I mean, you can't really affirm it, and I can't deny it. It's just, of course, it's possible. And
okay.
Maybe we could say one more. Yeah, I mean, just maybe just one
Thank
more
you.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, you're very welcome. Just one more thing. I, as I've gotten older, when I was young, I very much had my, you know, sort of like the full-on, infallible, omniscient Prabhupada in my mind and heart. But as I've gotten older, I find Prabhupada, who is just a pure devotee from the spiritual world, very charming. You know, the way I look at it is, Prabhupada says in the second canto of the Bhagavatam that Krishna exhibits the universal form for people who are attached to the material universe. And it's an imaginary form for people attached to that, and or he said that like primitive people are attracted by great material manifestations, like a great fire, earthquake, or thunder. I think that when I was younger, just speaking about myself, I don't want to talk about other people, but when I was younger, because I still was very much attached to this world, even though I was kind of, you know, pushing it away as a you know, as a full-time devotee, I think therefore I kind of needed the Prabhupada Superman. I needed a Prabhupada who was, you know, even on the material plane, had all kinds of powers and he could do miracles. And I think, whereas now that I'm a little older, and hopefully by chanting Hare Krishna all my life, a little less attached to the material world, I think I'm more and more satisfied just with Prabhupada, the pure devotee of Krishna who came from the spiritual world. And I feel that I don't need Prabhupada to be a material Superman and perform all kinds of miracles. I mean, even like Jesus, the New Testament says that he's performing these miracles because the people he preaches to, they need it. That's kind of what they need to get excited about the program. They need to see, like, okay, loaves of bread or, you know, raising the dead. And Jesus even says in the New Testament, I sort of have to perform these carnival tricks because that's what the people want. So, anyway, any other questions?
Yes, Maharaj. There's one devotee that is in India. He typed out a question. It's kind of on shorthand, so I hope I'm getting it straight. But he says that I am from India and have been 5 years in ISKCON. I find that there's about 95% preaching, temple construction, temple building, but not enough training structure, which may spoil everything. There's a lot of revolving door concepts. What to do?
Huh. It's a very interesting observation. Of course, I mean, we do have to avoid the danger of looking at temples in one country or even just one part of one country and kind of taking that as ISKCON. ISKCON is a very, very large, diverse movement. And in some places, even in India, I mean, from what I've heard, unfortunately, I've never been there, but from what I've heard, the center in Chopati, the Radhanathaswamy, that community that he created, is really all about training. And in other places, I'm sure it's all about collecting and building temples. I think in general, what this devotee said, is it's very healthy to hear that. We need to hear that, I think, constantly. I have observed, and some people get upset, but I still think it's true, that we tend to exhibit much more enthusiasm to build temples and perform puja than we do, for example, to build schools to educate our children. I mean, how many great high schools are there in ISKCON? And as we know, high school is a critical age because when kids are very young, they kind of do what their parents say. And if you say you should love Krishna, they'll say, I love Krishna. And, you know, they mean it. But the real challenge is when they get older. And so it's really at the high school age, you could even say middle school and high school, that we ISKCON really needs to come in with powerful, first-class educational programs to so that we inspire our young people and keep them very tightly connected to Prabhupada. But if we look around, if we ask a simple question like how many great high schools are there in ISKCON, probably we don't want to ask that question. If we say how many big, beautiful temples are there, how much elaborate deity worship is there, that's a much bigger number, obviously. It's a very big number, but how many great high schools? So yes, again, I we don't want to just bash ISKCON because we're part of ISKCON, we want to, but ISKCON is us. I mean, we are responsible as much as anyone else, even if someone doesn't have a big position in ISKCON. But if you're inspired and you're positive and Krishna conscious and your motives are pure, you can make a difference. I mean, fortunately, ISKCON is in many ways is an open, free society. It's not like this tightly controlled cult. It's not, don't want to offend anyone, but it's not Scientology. So therefore, we really do have freedom. And just like in America is very fallen. But still, we have the freedom to try to change it. And so ISKCON, sure, certain things are not exactly the way they should be, but it's such a wonderful movement, ISKCON, that we do have the freedom to promote what we believe in and to make a difference. So I would suggest to this devotee that, yeah, what you've observed is there's some truth, a very healthy observation. We should all work to make ISKCON better. Anybody home?
Maharaj, I'm sorry. This is really complicated, so you have to be patient with us.
No, no problem. I could use the break. But go ahead.
Okay, maybe this would be our last question because it is getting a little late. But just one second. I just got a chat question. Let me find it. Where is it? Let's see. Oh. Sorry, it's hard to deal with about 50 different things going on here. Okay, here we go. Dandavat Maharaj. This is from Rushalji in Honolulu. Dandavat Maharaj, since you have been traveling all over, do you see an influence by wealthy Indians to change ISKCON temples to more like Hindu temples with various demigod deities. By the way, Maharaj, I don't think anybody on Ustream can hear me talking, so maybe you want to repeat my question for them.
Okay.
There's 53 looking.
Okay. This question was for those, it sort of, I think, picks up to some extent on Ustream, because I have an open mic here on Ustream, and it's pretty loud on my computer. Do I think there's an influence sort of wealthy Indians wanting to make ISKCON temples more like Hindu temples of demigods? I really don't think there's a whole lot of demigod worship in ISKCON. I can't say that there's none. I can't say there's not a single place in ISKCON where someone has a little need of someone, but, you know, Ganesh or Mahadev or so on. But I don't think it's a serious problem. And I think it's up to us to present the Krishna consciousness movement appropriately so we attract people all around the world. So, how's that, Ramananda?
Okay, unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, so should we wind it up there?
Yes, we should. I kind of muted everybody else here, so I'm the only one who can speak with you right now. But thank you so much, Maharaj. I am, because I'm Tree Kala Gya, I can anticipate what people are going to ask me, and they're going to say, when is Maharaj going to speak again?
Well, we'll negotiate that. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
And we'll figure that out.
Very good. I want to, of course, thank Maharaj very much for giving us his darshan. And I want to thank the community of devotees for tolerating all the technical glitches. I think we only went through one major glitch when you dropped, but we could still hear you, just a lot of echoes and stuff. But anyway, new technology always has to go through a learning curve, so I think we made it through this.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very happy that I got the opportunity to serve in this way.
Okay. So, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
What's very good for you?
Krishna.
Haribol.
Hare Krishna. Was very good. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I'm Gorakarna Darshini. I'm sorry. I have Omkar in Denver, and he wanted to make a question, but he's not able to speak, so he asked me to ask you a question. Do you want him to forward you that question in some other instance, or do I have a chance still to ask you a question?
He's off now. He'll have to get a hold of him separately. He hung up.
Okay, so is there any way that my son can forward the question to him?
Yes. You can forward the question to me, and I can forward it to him.
Okay, how can I get in touch with you? Do you have an email address?
Do you have our website, iskcon-hawaii.com?
Excuse me?
iskcon-hawaii.com.
ISKCON/Hawaii.
Dash, like a minus sign. ISKCON-Hawaii.com.
Okay. All right. And thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.